Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Sometimes great truths can be summed up in simple phrases. When it comes to health, the old adage, you are what you eat, basically says it all. Scientists are continually discovering connections between our diets and our health, and this is especially true with our brains. Joining us this hour to talk about how diet can impact the health of our brains is Dr. Neil Barnard. He is the founder and president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. He is an adjunct associate professor of medicine at George Washington University. He also has written several best-selling books on eating well for life and health. His newest book is called Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. He's with us today, and I welcome you to the show, Dr. Neil Barnard.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today.
You begin the book with a description of the rise and decline, or I should say maybe an analysis of the rise and decline of the Beatles, and compare that dynamic to what happens to our brains.
Yes. The Beatles, I think, are a perfect example. They had such energy and such drive, but before they became famous, the biggest problem they had is that that's pretty much all they had. They had drive and musical ability, but they were totally unmanaged and unmanageable. And Brian Epstein came in. He was their manager, took them under his wing, and within a very short time, they conquered the world. Well, your brain has all of these same motivations and desires, but is really quite disorganized. And the management functions of your brain are what are absolutely critical to allowing you to function in the world. And as we get older, it's those management functions that start to deteriorate. And in exactly the same way as a toddler starts to be able to gain control and instead of screaming can use words, at the end of life, it goes in the opposite direction. And so the goal we have is to keep our manager alive and keep our manager working really hard.
Because you made the point that when Brian Epstein died suddenly at a very young, and while the Beatles were still very young, things started to go south.
Right. He was all of 32 years of age. And as soon as he died, John Lennon turned to his others. He said, you know, that's it. That's the beginning of the end. And they started to sputter and really fall apart. And I thought that's really what happens to us in our day-to-day lives when people reach their older age. I remember my grandmother saying that things were starting to fall apart for her, and she could no longer control her memory and her learning. And so it's that management function that we want to keep as strong as possible. And the bad news is that many people start to lose that. The good news is that research has given us tools to keep it alive.
My grandmother died from Alzheimer's. A lot of people know somebody who has suffered with Alzheimer's or somebody who's living or taking care of somebody like that. That's not new. Let's talk about why you and many other scientists who study these issues believe it's becoming so important and so critical of an issue now.
Well, 15 years ago, I could not have written Power Foods for the Brain. I couldn't have said that with this diet change or that diet change, we can prevent this disease. The research was too new. It really had not borne fruit. But we have suddenly reached a point where we have enough findings, and they coalesce in a certain area, that we can really, I think, be quite definitive as to the sorts of things that people ought to do. There is still more science that has to be done, but now is the time to take action. On a personal level, all four of my grandparents developed dementia, and their hearts were beating. Most of them lived long lives, but for the last decade or thereabouts of their lives, they sat in a chair, and they didn't know even their loved ones. And when my father started to succumb to this, he diagnosed himself. He was a physician, and he said, I believe I'm having the initial signs of dementia. And I thought, no, Dad, that couldn't be. But as time went on, he said, I'm trying to read things. I can't retain anything. And it got worse and worse and worse. And when he finally died, it was as if he had died much earlier. But it's not just my family. I mean, every family has seen this. And the only reason that we put up with it is we thought, A, it's just old age and there's nothing you can do, or B, it's genetic. And if you've been dealt a genetic bad hand, there's nothing you can do. Both of those things are not correct. we now know that whatever your genes and whatever your age, there is a lot that you can do.
You know, most of us, and I'm sure you and I, grew up thinking that your brain was your brain. It was a fixed operation that, your brain on drugs or whatever, once you hurt your brain but the brain we know is there's the brain plasticity they talk about, that it can change, you can make it better.
Yes. And unfortunately for many people, they do a lot of things that threaten the brain, not realizing what they're doing. And in the same way as you don't get your first gray hair when you're 80 or your first wrinkle when you're 75, these things occur early in life. The very beginnings of aging start in the 20s or even before. The brain is being both assaulted by various, particularly things that we ingest, but it also is making intense efforts to rebuild and to reconstruct and to protect itself. And the beauty is that even though we haven't crossed the last T in research, we have enough information now to know what those threats are, and you can get out in front of the bus, get out from in front of the bus. And I do also believe that if we emphasize certain foods that have protective functions, specifically for the brain, but also for the rest of the body, that we will. I don't think we're going to eliminate Alzheimer's disease. I don't think we are going to eliminate all brain threats. But I do believe if we put this to work, we could probably prevent 70 to 80% of Alzheimer's cases. And when people are 30, 40, 50, the lapses and the lack of mental clarity that some of us feel, I think that could largely be erased as well, at least to a very substantial degree.
Going back to the dementia and the Alzheimer's, if we don't do anything as a society, where are we going to be in 45 years?
Oh, good heavens. We're in a terrible situation. Right now, 5 million Americans have Alzheimer's disease. And it's not quite half of us by age 85. And if you look into the decades to come, by about 2050, multiply all of that by 3. What I mean to say also is that the average person today who's in a residential facility, a nursing home, they need nursing care because they have Alzheimer's disease, the dollars of that, about $70,000 per person per year. That's average. That's going to go up as the baby boomers are hitting. And what we're seeing now is not just the fact that the baby boomers are reaching older age. What we are also seeing is the fast food revolution that brought burgers and chicken nuggets and cheese pizza into our lives in the 60s and 70s. Those effects are now being seen right now and in the years to come.
And so it's not that they're just aging, it's what their lifestyle is like as they're aging versus 50 years ago, what the lifestyle was like for aging people, much different.
Yes. Well, we weren't so hot before. Mm-hmm. Frankly, America has always had a diet that is sort of a B-minus, or, and I'm being generous here, compared with, say, rural Japan. In Japan, the dietary staples are rice, lots of vegetables. They weren't big meat eaters, and cheese really never crossed the Japanese plate until maybe the 80s, 90s, when Western eating habits came in. I grew up in Fargo, North Dakota, and my diet was largely influenced by the fact that my family was in the cattle business for many, many, many generations. But to tell you the truth, most Americans eat that same sort of way, where our dietary staple is not rice or vegetables, it's meat. And the fast food revolution just made it all worse. Bringing meat consumption, a century ago, was 124 pounds per person per year. That's how much meat we ate. By 2004, we weren't at 124 pounds. We were well over 200 pounds. So where do you put 75 extra pounds of meat every person every year? Cheese went up from less than 4 pounds to about 34 pounds. Why that matters is that these foods escort saturated fat into the diet. Saturated fat in research studies is tightly linked, not just to damage to the heart, but damage to the brain. And it was one of the first clues that we had that there are specific parts of the foods we eat that turn some little nuts and bolts in the brain to cause the Alzheimer's disease hallmarks called amyloid plaques to form. And that's what we believe is going on.
You make a point in the book, and I'm so glad you do, to describe plaques. Most of us think about it like when we think about what our dentist is scraping off our teeth.
Right.
But plaques isn't about to tell us what we mean by plaques going into the rest of the conversation.
Sure. P-L-A-Q-U-E, a plaque. Plaque is a generic term that your dentist will use that word. Oh, you got a little plaque on your teeth. Cardiologists use that word. They'll say, in your coronary arteries, there are plaques. You can think of it as just something that's adherent to your teeth or the wall of an artery that shouldn't be there. In the brain, there are what are called beta amyloid plaques, but they're not something you can see unless you have a powerful microscope. In between the brain cells are tiny little round little balls of yarn, or they're almost like meatballs. Those are beta amyloid plaques. A pathologist will stain them and look at them with a microscope, and they appear round and fuzzy. And if you tease them apart, they are made of traces of protein that come out of the brain cells. And in and amongst them are traces of metal, which you would never think in a million years that there could be iron or copper or aluminum in your brain. But that is what is in the plaques. And neurologists are still fighting about exactly what is the function of these plaques. What we do know is that they are a disease state. They are not normal, and they appear to be destroying the connections between the brain cells.
We're going to get back to the plaques, find out what you can do to alleviate them and restore your brain to better health. But first, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. More of this conversation with Dr. Neil Barnard still to come. But first, Rob Walker and Dana Vieta are here to tell you why you should support 89.7 NPR News.
And this is the 89.7 NPR News Spring Fund Drive, and our goal is quite simple, to get your contribution of support. Because if the people who value public radio take care of public radio, the programs you enjoy will always be here. You can do your part right now by contributing at 1-866-897-9678, or you can give online at WOSU.org. I'm Dana Vieta, and joining me right now is Rob Walker.
Well, hello, Dana, and the number to call is 1-866-897-9678. And we have a great thank you gift this hour for All Sides with Ann Fisher listeners only. Dr. Barnard's newest book, The Power Foods for the Brain. The book can help you learn the steps to protect your memory, prevent Alzheimer's, and enhance your cognitive skills. This book focuses on the foods you should be eating to help your brain, and it includes about 75 power food recipes to help get you started. This is your opportunity to support 89.7 NPR News and to support All Sides with Ann Fisher, and at the $100 level, we'll make this book available to you. But it's only for this hour, so you've got to call in right now at 1-866-897-9678, or you can visit us online at WOSU.org.
You know, All Sides with Ann Fisher discusses the issues impacting life in Central Ohio. Ann interviews lawmakers, policymakers, local business leaders, university professors, and many more types of unique and interesting guests. And on All Sides, the interviews are not just a quick 5 minutes. Ann talks to her guests for 20 minutes, 40 minutes, and sometimes a full hour. All Sides allows the guests to have their say in a civil conversation and gives the guests time to talk. These types of conversations are unique to public radio. Please support that right now and continue the conversation. Visit WOSU.org to give or call 1-866-897-9678.
Or visit us at WOSU.org. Again, at the $100 level, our gift to you is Dr. Barnard's newest book, Power Foods for the Brain. Now, this book really can help you learn the steps to prevent Alzheimer's, and enhance your cognitive skills. This is our gift to you at $100. It's so easy to support us. We've got some great folks ready to take your call. You can do it online. And at the $100 level for the book, you'll also receive the WOSU member card. So when you put it all together, this is a great time to call in and support 89.7 NPR News at 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org.
And we're asking you to think of this membership drive as a unique opportunity. You have the chance to be a leader. Today is your moment to let the leader in you shine. You're a public radio listener. Lead by example right now and become a public radio contributor. Donate by talking with a volunteer at 1-866-897-9678. 866-897-9678. You can also give online on our secure site at WOSU.org.
And supporting All Sides is easy. You can do it online or by phone. And when you pledge at the $100 level, we'll be happy to offer you as our way of saying thank you, Dr. Bernard's newest book, Power Foods for the Brain. Dr. Bernard is a researcher, a doctor, and a best-selling author. He has gathered information from lots of research to deliver an effective three-step program for boosting brain health. At $100, we'll be happy to offer you this book, Power Foods for the Brain, but you got to call in right now because it's for All Sides with Ann Fisher listeners only at 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org.
And on All Sides with Ann Fisher, you get to hear from new authors and historians as well as the latest news stories. Ann also talks about local foods and the arts. Every Tuesday, you get to hear Tech Tuesday on All Sides where Ann talks about the latest technology and gadgets. On Wednesdays each week, you get to hear Wellness Wednesday for discussions of the latest in medicine and tips on diet and exercise. If these types of discussions are important to you, then right now is the time to make a pledge of support. Your call will help us pay for All Sides in the months to come. Call us 1-866-897-9678 or visit us online to give at WOSU.org.
And we just have about 30 seconds in this membership opportunity. We want to remind you again at the $100 level, our gift to you is Dr. Bernard's newest book, Power Foods for the Brain. Dr. Bernard is a researcher, a doctor, and a best-selling author, and he's gathered information from lots of research to deliver an effective three-step program for boosting the brain. That's our gift to you at the $100 level or more. Give us a call. Our volunteers or operators are ready to take your call at 1-866-897-9678 or visit us online at WOSU.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest this hour is Dr. Neil Barnard. He is the founder and president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. He's an adjunct associate professor of medicine at George Washington University and the author of several best-selling books on eating well for life and health. The book we're talking about today is Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. Dr. Barnard, let's get to those three steps to protect your brain. They aren't all about food, but they do involve what you call power foods.
Yes. Well, and number one really is using foods in a good way. Number two is exercising both body and mind, pumping up the oxygenation of the brain and finding ways to strengthen the connections. And number three is looking at things that threaten the brain, which can be some medications. But really, I have to say, of all of these, foods are most important. And for me, the world changed forever. In 2003, the Chicago Health and Aging Project came out with several findings. And the one that really bowled me over was they looked at saturated fat, which is the fat in bacon fat, particularly dairy fat, cheese fat, that kind of thing. And they showed that the people who had the most saturated fat had about three times or more risk of Alzheimer's compared to other people. In other words, if you avoided it, you were largely protected. Then they looked at trans fats, which were in donuts and sometimes used in the fryers at diners and that kind of thing to make French fries. People who had the most trans fats had more than five times the risk of Alzheimer's. And that was horrifying to researchers because it meant we are going to have an Alzheimer's epidemic because these fats are integral to our culture. When I saw those findings, I was thrilled because it meant if you make a decision that I'm not going to eat those bad fats or the things that contain them, I can control my risk in the same way as once we know that cigarettes are a contributor to lung cancer, I can make a decision tomorrow about whether I smoke or not.
You know, a lot of this stuff applies to other diseases like diabetes and that sort of thing. I mean, is there some particular impetus for you for focusing on the brain in this?
Well, you know, that's actually what in large part led me to this is back in 2003, NIH funded my research team here in Washington to test a plant-based diet for type 2 diabetes. And the reason for this is there was a lot of population study evidence that people who avoided meat and dairy products did dramatically better with regard to diabetes. They were less likely to get it. If they adopted that kind of diet, they might do better. So we tested and a vegan diet, no animal products at all, for people with type 2 diabetes. They got dramatically better. As in every way, they lost weight, their cholesterol fell. In some cases, their diabetes even disappeared, for all intents and purposes. As we were finding that, brain researchers found that effectively the same kind of diet ought to be good for Alzheimer's. And we also knew that heart researchers were using this kind of diet not for diabetes, but because it doesn't have any cholesterol. And they were showing that you could open up arteries again. So it was quite amazing that one set of dietary habits could affect all these things, plus the fact that it was a major contradiction of everything I had grown up with personally, because my diet was not even remotely similar to that, at least up until that point, although I'm making up for lost time now.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Are we getting those toxic metals that you talked about, particularly copper, are a concern, and aluminum? Are we getting those from what we eat?
Yes. Yeah, we sure are. I mean, they're absolutely. If you look into the brains of Alzheimer's patients and you tease apart the beta amyloid plaques, you find iron, copper, you find aluminum, other metals. And copper is something that most people wouldn't give a thought to at all. But your body needs a trace of it for enzyme function. If you have zero copper, you can't survive. The problem is, what if I have copper pipes? In the 1920s, they became popular. The water sits in them overnight. I fill my coffee maker with the water in the morning. I drink it. I'm getting copper that nature never had in mind for me. You might have lobster or shrimp or other mobile shellfish or liver. These foods are quite high in copper or iron in red meat. And also multiple vitamins. The vitamins in them are fine, the vitamin B12, the vitamin D, but they add copper, they add iron. As if you're not getting them from foods, they pack them into the pills. That can overdose you as well. And we believe that these are the reasons why people are getting too much of these metals that are getting into the brain and leading to disease.
I have to admit, it's concerning to hear about the copper plumbing issue.
Yeah.
It was considered the gold standard.
Well, it is. Well, from a physical standpoint,
yeah,
you know, plumbers love it.
Yeah.
It's just your neurologist is not so thrilled with it.
So let's get into the power foods. What is good for us to eat? What's good for the brain?
Well, by the way, but before I make everybody panic and rip out their plumbing, there are water filters that will remove it. And also, you can wash your dishes, you can wash your hands, you can shower. There's no problem with that whatsoever. It's just what you are ingesting. You either need a filter, or you can get a big tank of water, and the water delivery guy will come every now and then and replace it for you, or whatever. That's going to be better for you. Aluminum is a similar story. Only reverse osmosis filters will remove aluminum. A typical filter that you just plug into your sink is not going to remove aluminum. And it's still controversial the extent to which aluminum affects the brain, but my view is that it is a neurotoxin. And so I think we should be careful about that.
Is aluminum as prevalent? Because you mentioned in the book that you should have coated. If you have an aluminum pan, it should be coated and so forth. But most people don't cook with aluminum pans anymore.
It's largely an economic issue. Aluminum is cheap.
Okay.
So people who can afford better cookware are going to do fine. But, you know, a lot of folks, regardless of economic level, are using a cast iron pan because it's folksy, it's fun, it's easy to cook with. But the iron gets into foods, and unless, if you're a woman before the age of menopause, you have a natural way of getting rid of excess iron through menstrual flow every month. Men don't have the luxury of that, so they are accumulating iron. And women after the age of 50 start accumulating iron. So your cast iron pan, if you're using that once a month, no big deal. But if you're using it every day, you're dosing yourself with iron. So stainless steel will not have that effect.
All right. So power foods.
Okay. The foods.
Let's get to the food. Let's get me hungry now.
All right. you know, we mentioned the saturated fat. And so if you're going out to eat, and we go to an Italian restaurant, and the waiter says, could I start you off with a glass of wine? You can say, sure. You know, I guess that's the fruit group, right? So It turns out that wine drinkers have about half the risk of Alzheimer's compared to other people. Now, big word of caution. If it's more than a glass or two a day, you're not doing your brain any favors. And it may not be the wine itself. It might be the grape. That grapes have anthocyanins that are antioxidants that protect the brain. Then you can have a nice salad. When you get your pasta, instead of topping it with the cheese sauce or the meat sauce, which is loaded with saturated fat, top it with wild mushrooms, chunky tomatoes, artichoke hearts, a spicy sauce, and you suddenly avoided all the saturated fat. You got a delicious meal. And then the waiter will say, would you like an espresso? And you can say, I read in this book that coffee drinkers have less risk of Alzheimer's. And it's true, they do. Although the caveat here is you have to drink about three cups to start to see the benefit. But the point I'm making is that you can have a delicious meal, but if you make the right choice, you can skip the bad fats.
You have lots of recipes in the book to help people get started with that, and they were put together by a couple people, Christine Waltermeyer and Jason Weirich.
Yes, that's right. And the reason is I want to help you get away from the saturated fat and the trans fat. I also wanted to build in certain things. Vitamin E is a brain protector. It cuts Alzheimer's risk anywhere from 25 to 70%. And so I don't want you to take a vitamin E pill. I want you to get it from walnuts and pecans and almonds and sunflower seeds. So we'll add it to salads and things. Green leafy vegetables, their foliage, if I can put it that way, they have a B vitamin called folate, which protects the brain. So we want to build that into recipes too. So Christine is from New Jersey, and she provides very straight-ahead recipes. Jason is from Phoenix and is a little more Latin kind of spicy flavor. And so I put in recipes from both of them because I wanted a person who might want a hearty bowl of lentil soup or mushroom barley soup, or maybe they want a little enchilada bean soup with a little zip in it so that people can choose what they want. Or maybe you like baked ziti, but we've got to defat it. Or maybe you want chocolate pudding, but we have to make it without the bad fat. You can do all that. So it's very, very easy to do.
And as far as the recipes go, there's 75 in the book. How did you decide what was going to go in?
Okay, we made a couple of rules. So I sat down with Christine and sat down with Jason, and I said, here's what we're going to do. No animal products at all. But I want everything to be recognizable and to seem delicious so that if you give it to your reluctant spouse who looks at you and says, uh-oh, another healthy meal, you know, oh boy, great. You want them to light up and say, oh, this is delicious. You know, tell them why this pizza or this chili has extra flavor. What is it? So the foods had to be familiar but delicious. But we threw out the animal products. We kept oils very low. And the ingredients, relatively few. I don't want you to have to go to a special store and get 36 ingredients. And we wanted to make sure that the brain-protecting foods, whether it's the beans or bananas or the grapes or the blueberries, which have those anthocyanins too, wanted to make sure that they are front and center in all of these foods.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. More of my conversation with Dr. Neil Barnard still to come. But first, here's Rob Walker and Dana Vieta to tell you about our thank you gift for this hour and to talk to you about why you should support 89.7 NPR News right now.
And this is the 89.7 NPR News Spring Fund Drive. I'm Dana Vieta. Listeners are our most important source of income. Giving right now to 1-866-897-9678 helps to keep the programs like All Sides with Ann Fisher on the air, and it only takes a couple minutes of your time. So please invest in your future 89.7 NPR News listening by calling right now. Here with me right now is Rob Walker.
Well, it's easy to support All Sides with Ann Fisher by calling 1-866-897-9678 or visit us on WOSU.org. If you're enjoying the conversation Anne is having with Dr. Neil Barnard, you may be interested in the very special premium we're offering this hour, and that is Dr. Barnard's newest book, Power Foods for the Brain. Dr. Barnard is a researcher, a doctor, and a best-selling author. He has gathered information from research to deliver an effective three-step program for boosting brain health. Support us right now at the $100 level, and our gift to you is the book Power Foods for the Brain as our way of saying thank you for supporting 89.7 NPR News and for supporting All Sides with Ann Fisher. The number again is 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org.
And again, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is a two-hour daily call-in talk show. This show is unique to 89.7 NPR News, and you're not going to find a show like this anywhere else on your radio dial. Civil conversations about state politics, issues at Columbus City Hall, events happening around Ohio. If a two-hour local call-in talk show is valuable to you as a listener, then we need your support right now with a pledge in whatever amount fits your budget. Visit us online at WOSU.org to give or call us at 1-866-897-9678.
And when you make that call or go online for a gift of $100 or more, we'll be happy to offer you, as our way of saying thanks, Dr. Bernard's newest book, Power Foods for the Brain. This is a three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. The book is valuable information about nutrition's surprising effect on the brain. It's our gift to you for the $100 level at 1-866-897-9678 or at WOSU.org. We'd love to hear from you right now to support All Sides with Ann Fisher and to support 89.7 NPR News.
You know, maybe you're wondering if you listen enough to warrant a contribution to 89.7 NPR News. Have you ever told someone, "I heard it on public radio"? Maybe you bought a book or tried a new recipe that you heard about here. If you've ever lingered just a little longer to hear the end of a story, then yes, you listen enough. And since you're still listening, even during a fund drive, well, you know what to do. You can call and contribute right now, the number 1-866-897-9678, or give online at WOSU.org.
Once again, it's simple and easy to support us at 89.7 NPR News. All we ask for you to do is give us your name, address, telephone number, email address, the amount that you'd like to give, your credit card information, and that's it. We're also going to ask you if you'd consider a sustaining membership. This is a great way to show your support for All Sides with Ann Fisher. Maybe you want to come on board at, say, $10 a month. That would be a $120 annual gift, but it would continue to renew. You would get $10 a month every month on your credit card until you ask us to either increase it or decrease it or stop altogether. And if you do $10 a month, well, we'll be happy to offer you Dr. Neil Bernard's brand new book, Power Foods for the Brain. 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org.
You know, every time you tune in to our station, you get the opportunity to stop, listen, and really see our world. Whether it's during your morning commute on 315 or your evening drive home on 71, maybe you spend some time during lunchtime moments with your radio, or maybe you listen while you're settling in for the evening. No matter when you listen to 89.7 NPR News, we are here for you with news and information that helps you reflect and better understand the world around you. It only happens with your support. Make a gift right now to keep this one-of-a-kind radio station strong. WOSU.org or give by calling 1-866-897-9678.
And once again, if you contribute at the $100 level or more, we'll be happy to offer you Dr. Bernard's newest book, Power Foods for the Brain. This is a three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. The book is valuable information about nutrition's surprising effect on the brain. That's our gift to you at the $100 level when you call 1-866-897-9678 or visit us online at WOSU.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Dr. Neil Bernard. We're talking about his newest book. It's called Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. Dr. Bernard, we've been talking about foods, the power foods, which is one of the three steps. Before we move on to the others, I want to talk first about, you mentioned grapes. You know, it says in the book that people can reduce stroke risk by 50% by eating an apple a day, and there's studies that show that. But there's certain fruits, too, that you have to be careful where they come from, and there's lots of warnings out there now that the pesticides that are being used are creating other hazards.
Yes. It really is an unfortunate thing, because in their natural state, apples and grapes and all the fruits and vegetables really are so nutritious. They provide us what we need. They also give us the things they use to protect themselves, like the orange beta carotene in a carrot that protects the carrot, well, it protects us too. And unfortunately, the chemical industry has now marketed all sorts of things that can be added to them that do get into our bodies, and there's a huge scientific debate over every one of these things, whether it was ALAR in apples or whatever. Mm-hmm. And my general view of this is that we should buy organic whenever possible, but especially for those foods where pesticide applications are quite common. Apples are a case in point.
All right. Well, step two, exercise for the brain.
Yes. At the University of Illinois, researchers brought in a group of people, older folks, and they got them lacing up their sneakers. What they asked them to do was to get a brisk walk 3 times a week, and they did an MRI of the brain before and after. What they showed was that at the center of the brain is an organ called the hippocampus, which, by the way, is Latin for seahorse. Early anatomists thought it just looks like a seahorse. It sort of looks like a crescent moon. This is the part of the brain that when you learn a new fact, it decides whether to store it or whether to just let it go. And so the hippocampus is the gatekeeper to memory. When the exercisers came in at the end of a year, and they had been getting their brisk walk 3 times a week, they had an MRI. The hippocampus, instead of shrinking, which is what happens to most people as the years go by, it was actually getting bigger. There was something about oxygenating the brain and getting the nutrients to the brain that completely reversed brain shrinkage. But the amazing thing was the exercise program that they used. They didn't say, you've got to wear spandex and you have to go slogging down, you do a 5K every day.
You don't need $125 shoes.
No, exactly. They said, brisk walk, 10 minutes a day, three days a week. And then the next week, 15, 3 days a week. The next week, 20, 3 days a week. And then they worked them up to a 40-minute brisk walk 3 times a week, and at that point, they just held and said, keep going there. So a 40-minute brisk walk 3 times a week is more than sufficient to pump up that part of the brain. Now, should you do more? Yeah, I think the more exercise you do within limits of safety, the better. But you do not have to be a marathon runner. You can just simply a 40-minute good brisk walk or anything equivalent. And if you don't have 40 minutes, research also suggests you can break it up, 20 minutes in the morning or even 10 minutes 4 times a day, sort of whatever gets your pulse going. Mm-hmm. In a good way.
And then you recommend exercises for the brain. There's lots of stuff online. I feel like every day my job is an exercise for my brain.
Well, it is. It is. Not everybody does have an intellectually stimulating job. And when you turn on the television, some things are stimulating. Others keep us just very passive. But some research out of Quebec in Canada looked at people who were bilingual, and they found that bilingual people who not just learned a second language, but people who use a second language daily, the fact of being bilingual could actually put off cognitive decline by about 5 years. And so that suggested there's something about processing those circuits that could really help. So other researchers have done specific interventions with brain programs that aim to look at processing speed, in other words, reaction time, also reasoning ability, and also memory, those three things. And you can easily show that memory can be improved, and it is regardless of age. So we call that cognitive reserve. Under the assumption that you may lose some brain cells later in life, let's pack in as many connections as we can ahead of time, and you build up your cognitive reserve. But what I suggest is don't do only that. Build up your cognitive reserve, absolutely. But at the same time, take away the threats that are going to remove the brain connections later, and you get the best of all possible worlds. And so the goal is your brain is absolutely sharp for as long as your heart is beating.
And then there's sleep, my favorite component of this three-part plan. But you couple the chapter on sleep with sleep and medications.
Yes.
What's the connection there?
Well, sleep is absolutely integral to having a good memory and good reasoning and good brain function all in all. And I have to say, I learned about this the hard way. When I was a third-year medical student, we would go to work on Monday. We would work all Monday night, all day Tuesday without sleep. We would go home Tuesday night and crash. And then Wednesday was a, quote, normal day. Thursday, we would work all Thursday, Thursday night, all day Friday without sleep. And then Saturday was a normal work day. It sounds ridiculous today, but that's the way many doctors were trained. What I noticed very quickly was, although I was learning a lot, I was retaining very little, and my memory was shot. What we now know is if I bring in a person and I hook you up to an EEG machine and I lay you down, your head on a pillow, I say, go to sleep. The first half of the night, what predominates is what is called slow wave sleep. The brain is taking all of the facts, all of the events that occurred during the day, so many file folders jumbled all over your mental desk, so to speak. The brain organizes them, puts them away so that you can find them again the next day. If you're awake during that part of the night, the brain cannot do the slow wave sleep. Your file folders, your memories, remain in a jumble, and your memory will be terrible. The second half of the night is when you are dreaming, so we see REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep. The funny emotional content of dreams is when your brain is regaining its emotional control. So what happens if you stay up all night? Memory is shot. Your emotional control will be poor. You'll be grumpy, sometimes giddy. So sleep is not optional. I don't care how great your book is. 10 o'clock, if you turn off the light, lie down, go to sleep, in the morning, you will be so much refreshed. But I encourage people to do this in a natural way, and I have a certain way that I approach this, rather than with sleeping medications, because they are often memory destroyers too.
Rather than medication. So yeah. If you're doing it, if you're using a medication, that's taking away the benefit, or some of it.
Yes, and some of the most popular medications, unfortunately, have really surprising effects. The most popular sleeping pill that college students are taking, and, well, frankly, a lot of people are taking, when people take these medicines, there's a whole class of very popular sleep medications that are prescription medications. You might knock off and go to sleep. After an hour or so, you might wake up again, and you'll find yourself going down to your kitchen and opening up the refrigerator, and it makes you in sort of a little bit of a party mode where people eat more. And in some cases, people have gone out sleepwalking or sleep driving, sort of in a fog, and people will go out and come home with bags of groceries and eat all kinds of things. Then they finally make their way back to bed. They get up in the morning at 7:30. They go in their kitchen. They say, "What's all this? What is all this food? Where did this come from?" It has wiped out their memory. And when these reports first came out, the manufacturer said, "Now this has got to be rare." I have to tell you, it's routine. People taking certain sleep medications, very common sleep medications, have this effect very, very often. I'm not saying they can never be used, but I am saying that they will. You will not register memory for the things that you have done while that medicine was in your bloodstream. So it has a risk. Statin drugs for cholesterol, same story. They really do lower cholesterol. They are very effective for that. But one of the rare side effects that has been added to their list of side effects in recent years is sometimes very dramatic effects on memory. So what do? If a person has a sudden change in memory, march over to your medicine cabinet, throw it open, and see what is in there that you have been taking. And talk to your doctor about what you can stop, because there have been people who have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease in a nursing home who, once you took away their statin drug, they recovered their memory. They packed up and they went home. So medicines can be life-saving, but they can also be very destructive.
Let's talk about foods and serotonin. You write about that in the book, and serotonin is something that helps you sleep. So there are some kinds of foods that can help build up serotonin?
Yes, that's right. And many people have heard what has turned out to be a myth about this. Foods can boost serotonin, but not the ones people are thinking of. The usual myth is, after my Thanksgiving meal, I became so sleepy, I fell asleep, and it must have been the turkey. Well, turkey does have something in it called tryptophan. And tryptophan does make serotonin in the brain, but here's the problem. Turkey has many, many amino acids that make up the protein chain. The amino acids are the beads that make up the protein necklace, so to speak. Tryptophan is one of them. And if that tryptophan could only get up to the brain, it would make serotonin. But turkey contains so many other amino acids, they all compete to try to get into the brain, that the more turkey you eat, the less tryptophan gets into the brain because of all the competing amino acids. What do you do? If a person goes to their refrigerator and pulls out some plain old white bread or any other high-carbohydrate food and you eat that, what happens is your body responds to the rise in blood sugar by making insulin to get the sugar into the cells. That insulin also takes out of the blood all of those competing amino acids, and then the tryptophan goes up to the brain and makes serotonin. So how do you use this? You wake up in the middle of the night, it's 3 in the morning, and all the worries of the day are crushing on you. And you're lying there in bed thinking, I can't go back to sleep. Get up, go to the refrigerator, have 2 slices of bread, or some orange juice, or both. Your blood sugar rises, the insulin responds to it, it takes all those competing amino acids out of your blood, the tryptophan goes to the brain, it makes a little serotonin, and you go right back to sleep. So I'm not suggesting white bread under any other circumstances.
I was going to say, I've never heard you say white bread before.
But white bread is going to be your best middle-of-the-night sleeping pill, and you will say, oh, great, I salvaged that night thanks to white bread doing this. But if you had a drumstick, it would actually have the opposite effect. It is not going to make you go to sleep.
We've been talking about the book Power Foods for the Brain, an effective 3-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and I want to say thanks to Dr. Neil Barnard for joining us today to talk about the book. Now with more information on how you can support our station during our spring membership drive, here's Rob Walker and Dana Vieta. Thanks again, Dr. Barnard.